Welcome to the Future Cheer Podcast. I'm Leon Fitzpatrick.
And I'm Jos Stauer.
And we'll be talking about everything from Taoism to design to traditional Chinese medicine and everything in between.
And we talk about how to make purpose out of life and life out of purpose, whatever that means.
Join us for our next amazing adventure into the unknown. Hey, we're in Connaught. Well, where are we then?
We are in the middle of the... We're in the woods. We've got a little log cabin in the woods.
It is a log cabin.
It is a full-on dedicated log cabin made by a woodworker right in the woods. And it is a perfect Taoist abode because we are on an ascending slope of the hill where the descending valley moves towards the water. Because down there is the river and the dam, and the ascending hill is up towards the hill. And we are facing exact perfect location of north, south, east, and west. And we are right in the middle of that hill, and we are surrounded by just nature.
Yeah, and literally, because we're sitting outside at the moment.
Yeah, so we're
pretty nature-y.
So I'd say, and we got, like, we are surrounded by basically only trees, birds, lot of kangaroos and quite a few snakes.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here having my lunch. Yeah. And I see a snake running around, but they're cool. I mean, look, they leave me alone. I leave them alone. I don't have any issues with them.
I'm sitting with my back to the garden, so if you see a snake behind me,
let me know. Yeah, yeah. It's they're not that big. I mean, they're only about 3 meters. So,
is it a python? Like a carpet?
I don't know what it is. Okay. It's just all kind of stuff. You know, like some of them look quite interesting, very colorful.
Yeah.
The fact is they hear us before we see them, yeah. You know,
and that's true.
They got no interest in biting us, you know, like because they're losing venom and they've got other things to do.
That's a pretty optimistic.
They've got other things to do. Look, nature knows its place. And we as a human are a bit of a thorn in the eye to them.
Yeah.
Because we don't quite fit in. And I can see that every morning when I do my Tai Chi here, because the kangaroos are come up and trying to work out what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because obviously some of the moves resemble the nature of the kangaroo. Mm. Stand up and then you've got that box with each other.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite good with boxing.
And they have a lot of leg strength too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's one kangaroo, he's particular, bit of a concern to me sometimes because he's slightly taller than me.
Yeah.
So I'm 1.96 meters. So he actually was like 2 meters away from me and he stood up and he looked at me and I thought, probably better move to different lines.
Yeah, maybe he was there first, I guess.
Because he didn't move.
And you're on a nature preserve here, right? So no, the animals have never really.
Yeah, it's a community, just a water's community. So there's not cats allowed, not dogs allowed. So the result of that is, you know, everything is just very much integrated with nature.
Yeah.
And you can really tell. It's just, it's by itself now. Yeah. And because we're obviously neighboring to a long-term forest anyway, so we're right at the end of this big terrain and there's like just endless forest behind us. So you just, and then it's quite a few hills before it actually turns into some kind of allotment, which is called civilization, in front of a village. And so it's pretty Armageddon-proof.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to get to.
Yeah. So it's a shit, it's a fan. Well, when the shit, it's a fan, we probably won't notice.
Yeah. 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 And there's no phone signal here. So you've got really good Wi-Fi, though.
Yeah.
So
incredible.
You may be able to check out that.
Yeah. One of the guys who lives here, he's an IT visit from Silicon Valley, and when COVID hit, he couldn't return. So he decided to convert the whole place into an underground internet with its own satellite.
Yeah, right.
So you've got 200 megabytes per second internet, which is...
It's about 150 more than I have, I think, in the city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like 100 times faster than NBN, and it's got nothing to do with Telstra.
Yeah, that's nice.
So if there's Telstra outage, Optus outages, we're still on.
Yeah, you're inside. Yeah,
cool. They're rebels here, which is good. And so there's people who don't fit into the society, which is good.
Yeah.
And because that's exactly where we need to head. We need to move towards, like, basically officially say, society, you are living the wrong way.
Mm.
Well, it's time to speak up. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at what happened when everyone tried to, you know, everyone was so worried about fitting in. Look what they did and said and the way they behaved, you know. And then I see people who, you know, whatever side of the battle they're on, that they just desperately wanted to go back to the way it was. And you see people like, oh, it's going to take decades or 100 years to recover from all the damage that was done, not from the virus, but the reaction to it, you know, like education systems and financial systems. And I read that and I thought, it's completely the wrong way to talk about it.
Yeah, it will not work.
Like, you can't try and get it back. You can't try and recover from it. It's ridiculous. You have to move.
Yeah.
And clearly, we've got to move in another direction. And you can see it now.
Yeah.
But the trying to return to normal, I still hear people say that, you know, never be the way it was. I'm like, well, that's probably not necessarily a totally bad thing.
Yeah.
But the clawing to it and trying to recover it or reclaim it is not going to work.
Yeah, we just have to acknowledge, we have to acknowledge the old way of living is finished, it's dying.
Yeah.
And societies of the old that are established are dying.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, something new is coming up, which is worse than the name of the game being here in the physical.
Mm.
It's a transformation from yin to yang. And it's just like for us, it's just so profound now for most of us who are living right now that this is like one of the biggest transitions we have seen in the development of humanity. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in the 60s as a teenager. So I listened to the stories of my parents during the war and the transition they went through. But it was still a gradual process of change, not so soft like
decades,
bang, and not so like a fundamental shift in ideologies, and in particular, not this shift in what do you actually believe in and what do you actually hold on to, right to the point of what the fuck is life?
Yeah, 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 that's for certain, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like this incredible confusion now amongst, you know, what is actually the whole purpose of all this behind this. Really, it acquires new ways of living that we can integrate a guidance system that is actually implemented within us.
Yeah.
I mean, this is why I love the Taoism, because the Taoism is the philosophy that is based on transformation. So it understands that the transition is a natural ingredient of life, is essential for the evolution of humanity and for the consciousness, because in Taoism, it's very clear. The only purpose of the human body is to allow the soul consciousness to have a platform to operate from in order to evolve itself. So it requires the stimulus of the external that now acts on the body, which then causes all kind of like emotionality. But that process is essential in order to actually impact on the soul to grow.
Yeah.
And so then when it's returning, it has got a higher density.
Yeah.
It got a higher vibration. It's got a higher, far more solid experience of itself.
Yeah.
And so Taoism understood right from the start that this is really the reason for being here. So therefore, it developed a guideline and a lifestyle and a medicine that incorporates the transition. Mm. So I did understand that things eventually come to an end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading about the word, you hear about Armageddon and apocalypse, and like, I'm not sure about Armageddon, but I know the etymology of the word apocalypse is not negative. It's used in a negative term, but I think it's a shift or a change or something like that. It's I've got to read the exact description, but we use these words and it's like, you know, and the end of everything, and the apocalyptic is always a, you know, apocalyptic movie or a timeline is a negative thing. But you can't have a new thing without the old thing going somewhere. It has to go somewhere. It has to disappear. It has to be destroyed, or something has to happen quite dramatically to. And I think it means that it's not a gradual change. It's a very quick change in the timeline of things, right?
Yes,
but I think you're right about that. Even what you see in the media and the way people are behaving and what we're talking about, there's, you know, it's only been a few years since everything completely upended, and now it's been changing quicker and quicker and quicker. So it seems like whatever's happening is compacting. And we had this chat this during the week about time, and I'm just, the experience of time now is such a strange thing to me. Things I thought was, you know, I'll do that, I'll get to that, you know. You know, when the year ended last year, I'm like, oh, I guess early January, I'll have this done, mid-January there. And then suddenly it was like late January. And it was complete this like fog. Like it was doing stuff,
Mm-hmm.
But now I was trying to retrack what I had been doing, and it was just like this kind of fog, like time's just going. I look at my watch and it's 2 hours later, 3 hours later, next day. It's a very unusual feeling. So this, I read a year or two, a couple of years ago, that there were, you know, physicists, you know, on the very technical side were looking at time, and they actually said that measure of time actually is moving faster to the way the Big Bang occurred and the expansion of the universe. So they were trying to measure time moving more quickly. And then there's our perception of time, which I was training this week with our, you know, teacher Nathan, and we're doing standing, we're doing posture standing. And Qigong standing is one thing, but when you're in a posture and you start saying that 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you notice then time does slow down if you're in some sort of discomfort or pain. And I just thought that's an interesting way to not control it, but to experience it differently, to put yourself in a different situation, something uncomfortable or something that's difficult, and suddenly, whoop, you're like... You know, everything seems to reduce and slow down to almost, you know, standstill. But then when you're maybe distracted or trying to distract yourself, or you're getting dragged along by other people's expectations or the news or whatever, suddenly you're being dragged by it. You know, it's like you're out of control of it because you've not doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really interesting that this happened to me this week. That was like, oh, right. There's a very easy way that I can, the world around you might be doing something, but you can actually manipulate that on your own and the way you perceive it, but you're also, you know, your control sounds like the wrong word, but you're able to affect it. And I just wonder if everyone was doing that, you know, together, would that actually...
Yeah, this is obviously where quantum physics now is coming into more and more into the play, because quantum physics now has observations that previously before that was not available to be measured. I mean, what if you use the word measured?
Yeah.
In this
technology.
Context.
Yeah.
Because obviously, it was always there the assumption that there's more than just the dimension that we perceive, like the three or four dimensional world. I mean, dimension means measurement. So, according to the quantum physicist Michi Okako, they can measure 11 dimensions now. And so, when it comes to time, obviously, it always depends on what dimension you're actually operating in. Yeah. So, to the latest understanding, our mind perceives itself in all 11 dimensions.
Yeah.
So it's our mind can perceive itself in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth dimension, according to them. So what it means is that obviously according to the measurement of the specific other dimension is that means time is different.
Yeah. Very right.
Yes. Obviously within this dense reality as we perceive it within the three-dimensional world, up, down, and then depths.
X, Y, Z,
X, Y, Z. So then you got the measurement of, also then you got the measurement of the time in there, which makes it fourth dimensional. But obviously what's going on here is the factor that actually within this is your perception of who you are as a local reference point, that according to the latest understanding in quantum physics with quantum entanglement is non-local.
Yeah.
So we, within the three-dimensional domain, perceive ourselves as local. But then once we're moving in a different way of dimension, it becomes more and more non-local.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means time moves outside the reference point of being local.
Yeah.
So now that means it has got a totally different pace.
Yep.
And because within, you know, when you're doing your touchy posture, you are X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
So therefore, time perceives itself within that influence of X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But once you start meditating, it's X, Y, Z, S, T, G, W. You know?
Yeah.
And suddenly the measurements are not within three angles and not four angles. And obviously now it has got totally different ways of perceiving it.
So you're like moving between them? Is that a way to look at it? Like if you had a, I don't know how many episodes ago, 10 episodes ago, you had an analogy about, I think it was all the, you know, the Tao, the yin yang, and using an analogy projector, the film, the bulb, the screen.
Yeah.
That was how we can, reality. Is there a way?
Yeah, that's within the X, Y, Z.
Yeah. So
you got the projector, the light, and then you got the screen.
Yeah.
So that's within the three-dimensional domain. And then you obviously that movie that you see in the screen is exactly within the experience of that linear progression.
So if we were to talk about...
Because you've got a local reference point.
Yes. If we were to talk about what you're talking about, how would you then... Is there an analogy you could use to explain then, once we get outside that third dimension, fourth dimension, up to 11, is there a spatial way to explain that spatially in terms of like to get an image of how that's working? Like if you're moving between... able to move between those dimensions through meditation or some other way, is it like going through walking through a wall into another space? Or does that not work? Do you know what I mean? Like a way to visually represent that or talk about that.
Obviously, we try to explain a complete different spatial orientation within the limitation of a three-dimensional spatial orientation.
We're on a episode because it's an audio podcast, so it's even worse than that.
Maybe we should drop LSD. And then we are able to...
Yeah, we'll be right back. Yeah. I'll have a brief intermission.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they're measuring 11 dimension at this stage. So
yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's going to be all that. Yeah, quantum physicists.
Yeah.
According to Michio Kaku.
Yeah.
So we have to quote those guys because I can't speak as an authority. I just only have to say according to them.
Yeah.
Because I can't even get my head around it, what it means to be fifth dimensional or sixth dimensional.
Right. Yeah.
So they have got ways of measuring it in order to have come to that conclusion. For them, it's obvious that there is. However, where's their consciousness in that moment in them to perceive it as such, which is obviously a totally different debate. So at this stage, they're measuring 11. I remember my father. He studied engineering and physics at university in the 1930s, and he was highly influenced by the quantum mechanics of physicists because that was obviously the big thing back in the day in the 1930s because he was at university in Berlin, and Einstein was their hero.
Yeah.
And Berlin was it was the philosophy center, and that's where everything was happening, you know? There was all the drugs are going down, all the music's going down, all the politics going up, and the physics erupting.
What year? What is this? Like roughly
1935.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was in the time when he was like pretty much at its peak, and they were heavily influenced by this. What Einstein saw in terms of that it's all relative, and that means it's non-local. So the quantum entanglement idea came in, and it was only till about 2000 that it actually was a paper finally established that. Actually, the physical reality is non-local due to the quantum entanglement. Means a particle right here can be immediately entangled with a particle on galaxies away.
Right.
So that means it's not local. Yeah. Because there's no travel distance between the two particles. It's just instant there. Right. So the time does not... However, we perceive ourselves, and that's why it's the observational aspect is that comes into play. Anyway, my father... was part of that student movement that opened up to this new thinking because quantum mechanics and quantum physics, what my father always said to me, was like the first awakening because he observed the 60s because I was influenced by the hippies. And I said to my father, this is the awakening of consciousness and Aquarian age. And he said, the first awakening was quantum physics.
Right.
It moved away from the fact that it's local. And I said, what do you mean with that?
Like you're calling him a weirdo. You're talking about him. He's like, no, it's weird. Don't be weird.
Yeah, he just went off and went on a tantrum that it's actually all non-local. And I said, oh, shit, maybe I should smoke what he does. I actually had a joint with him back in the day.
Really?
Yeah. I smoked a bit of hashish with him and some Southern Comfort. He loved Southern Comfort.
Whiskey, bourbon.
Like American bourbon.
Yeah.
And that's when he really opened up about this sort of like non-locality and what Einstein saw. And because obviously he said that was pretty much in that time, they saw themselves as there's an awakening happening.
Right.
Yeah. So when we talk about awakening now, they already spoke about the same thing. They said, wow, this is just, there's something new going on here. And they suddenly understood that there, from within, that there is more than just this physical world, which is measured by the three dimension. And if you put movement into it, then it's fourth dimensional, which is time. So they were speaking about that there will come the time soon, very, very soon, where we perceive the dimensions beyond that.
Mm.
So he was already discussing with his friends what this could be. I mean, they didn't drop LSD in order to do those debates. Yeah. They actually were fully influenced by university and by academics, but it allowed to speculate philosophically on a level that for that was not possible.
Yeah.
Because Newton said, okay, the apple falls down over the tree, and then ask him the question, maybe the earth moves towards the apple.
Did he say that or someone else said that?
Well, Newton, apparently, yeah.
Mm.
So obviously they were the first awakening, if you could see.
Sure.
You know, okay, maybe the apple doesn't fall down.
Yeah.
And before that, you know, when a Viking hit someone with an axe on the head, it was like obvious.
Maybe they walked into the axe.
Yeah.
Maybe it's their fault.
So if you go to battle, they're heading their head against that.
What?
You could say that.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that was like 1600s,
yep.
You know? Okay, maybe it's not quite the way it's delivered. So that was pretty much like the first stage of awakening.
Yeah.
You know, the fact, I mean, it's pretty radical to say, hang on. It was very obvious, everyone here, the apple falls down from a tree and lands on a fucking ground. That's how it is, you know? And then someone comes up.
No.
It's the other way around.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? So that was like completely outrageous.
Yeah.
And obviously that's why some people did finish off on the state and got burned, because obviously that allowed.
Yeah, well, it's pretty grim, but yeah. Yeah,
because the church didn't like that.
No, they didn't like that.
Because obviously there was someone interfering with their power.
Yeah.
You know, there was obviously, that's an interesting observation, that every time there's an awakening, there's also the established power, authority, not liking that.
It's an established ideology, prevailing ideology. And I love how we talk about how funny, but the Bible is probably one of the most heavily edited books of all time.
Mm.
And you just think it's funny that the church was calling bullshit on people based on this thing that is complete bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that's just been construed and hacked and rewritten and changed and manipulated over time to the point where it's just a pure doctrine and just highly authoritarian ideology. And then they go after people who challenge it. And like you said, burn people. How many people got burned? And, you know.
It was because the new idea came through, and that new idea came from within.
Yeah.
It was always, that was an interesting observation that my father always taught me about. Every time there's a new idea coming into the world, it's actually always coming from people, from within, but no one knows where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no rational explanation behind it. So that, like, there was an intent, but where did this intent come from?
Yeah.
You know, that obviously, because my father always said, you know, because consciousness determines what actually converts the particle into waveform into particle and all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So without the consciousness, basically, without the observation, you can't have matter as such.
Yeah.
Without the observation, you don't have that what we perceive as a cup or microphone, which is obviously a spooky action in the distance in the first place, but maybe it's a spooky action in the presence.
Yeah.
Spooky action right in front of my nose.
Did your dad think about, or did you even talk about this to him? Because if he was doing what he was doing in the 30s with quantum physics.
Yeah. He studied engineering, but physics was part
of it.
Because he was an aircraft engineer, and he was part of that secret team which developed the ME-262, the first jet, the Messerschmitt.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he was part of that secret team, Hitler's secret team. Yeah, and obviously there's some guys were kidnapped by the Americans, and the whole thing was hijacked and taken to America with Werner von Braun. But he was in that team.
Yeah.
So and because it was all about moving away from a propeller into a jet, no one had the idea of a jet. Everyone thought, okay, you have to be mechanically, you're going to create that propeller, and that creates a turbulence in the air, and that moves it forward.
Yeah.
But what about you go the other way?
Yeah, suck it in. Like,
And so that was
light on fire and push out the back.
Once again, where did the intent come from?
Yeah.
You know, like before the jet, no one understood what a jet was.
Yeah.
You know, now it's just obvious.
Yeah.
And so he was part of that development, and in order to get into that, you had to really work. As he said, we have to push the envelope.
Yeah.
And that actually came from those guys. Pushing the envelope comes from the engineers who developed planes.
Yeah.
Because that's the wing of the plane. like the Messerschmitt has got this beautiful wing formation that has got this perfect angle.
Yeah.
So it can go very fast and vertically down into the ground. And just before it hits the ground, it can instantly move itself up. So obviously, in order to develop that, they had to push the envelope, meaning quite a few pilots lost their life by doing it. And then he went back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
And then eventually they got it right. But then those Messerschmitts were enormously effective planes.
Yeah.
Because they were faster than people could shoot at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so pushing the envelope had to allow them to get into the matrix of reality and forces.
Yeah.
But then in order to develop the jets, you had to go into other aspects, and that allowed them now to put into what quantum mechanics had to say in terms of what impacts this locality. And because you actually work with a totally different way of working with energy. Yeah. And that's what he always said to me, said like, because they understood that without the observation, the waveform will not turn on the particle. So it will not become the particle.
Right.
So that means when there's a new idea coming into the world, you know, where did that come from?
Right. Where without it. Yeah.
Yeah. Not externally stimulated. Yeah. Yeah? It may be someone having disagreement with how the physical world is developing, and then suddenly got an idea about it. But once again, where did that come from? Because it always comes from a different source. It comes from somewhere. Yeah.
Yes.
And because it comes from somewhere, that's why you always said to me, that's most likely that there are more than just four dimensions.
Yeah.
Because that, where the idea comes from, already exists in a different realm.
Yeah.
Because whatever the intent comes in, it's based on fact, on a law.
Yeah.
But we haven't perceived it as such.
Yeah.
And then the engineers of back in the days, they obviously had the intent, and then, okay, how can we move towards that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was perceived metaphysically.
Yeah.
By transcending the realms of the three to four dimensional world by going into multidimensional realities.
Yeah.
But then had to be very, very grounded, because engineers are not people who go into conspiracy theories.
Exactly, no. Well, no. Yeah, that's speculated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you had to be really, really, really centered and grounded in order to put it into form.
Yeah. So they're sort of tethering it somehow. I guess if you think about design and engineering and people who make things and actually produce things that you can see and touch and feel, they actually have to be quite, you said, grounded. They have to actually be able to pull that. So you got those things floating around, or maybe passing
mentors,
and you have to, in order for it to come to you, you have to be like a lightning rod or a receiver, like a
text. Yeah, yeah. Right. The according to their speculation, the intent is instrumental. The idea is instrumental.
Yeah.
Without the idea, you actually don't have a change.
Yeah.
So that idea is definitely not within this three-dimensional world. It can't, because otherwise you're reproducing or recreating something that already exists.
So this happens a lot, right? People see what someone else is doing and copy it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So like, that did well.
It's not an idea.
No, it's a copy. Yeah. And it happens a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you keep copying, then you actually take the spirit out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the idea is spirit.
Yes.
And the idea comes from something outside this three-dimensional, four-dimensional world.
Yeah.
It comes from somewhere else, because the idea is always correct. That's the beauty. That's the beauty of it. So when someone, like when back in the day, the development of the smartphone, when someone had the idea of this first iPhone or smartphone, obviously that came from somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it turned into something that is fully working.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, that was weird.
So it was an outrageous idea. And it was not like some sort of tripper.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we talked about Tesla a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
He mentioned in the late 1800s. They said at some point in the future, people will have a device that they carry in their pocket that will connect them to everywhere, anyone in the world, instantly.
Yeah.
But he had no, at that point, had like barely even had telephones, right? I don't think he had telephones. He had a pattern on the radio, but there was no form factor. There was nothing to suggest that would be, he wasn't copying that from someone else, for example. So stuff like
perceived
that.
Perceived it from a different dimension.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I was reading about, and I won't go too much on a tangent because there's a few things I want to go back to in a second, but everything I've been reading about since I was a kid seems to all be related. So you have these like pyramids, Tesla, UFOs, all this sort of stuff has some sort of crossover relationship. But I'm reading about this thing called the Black Knight satellite, which is an object that's actually in Earth's orbit. whether it's been there permanently or not is unknown. It was acknowledged by NASA in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been photographed outside of the ISS. It's recorded as a real thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. Like, it's not there. It's for sure there. What it is, is unknown, basically. And people have these very, very broad theories about what it actually is. But it's been there supposedly for over 10,000 years, 15,000 years. And there's some connection with Tesla, because Tesla, I mentioned that in our last episode, or two episodes ago, that he would say that he was receiving information from somewhere else. And he said he picked up signals that were not natural signals from space. This is, again, this is 1800s, so it's not like you had the high-tech equipment. And some people mentioned that this satellite might be some sort of receiver or relay or something that you can get things from. But the idea that these things are in the ether or coming through other dimensions is interesting, because anything about UFOs I read, the more sense it makes when you start to realize they're not coming from another planet, they're coming from another. They're here, and they're just swapping between dimensions or realities, or they're in the same, a different plane.
Well, through wormholes or what?
Yeah, it's almost like it's not like you have to, because everyone keeps saying, oh, there's no way they could travel so far. I'm like, but what if it's not? You're using this old fashioned logistics and rockets.
Understanding letters, understanding time is like a spiral.
Yeah.
And so wormholes obviously connecting one geographical location off the spiral to the next one. Yeah. That means you can go instantly from, rather than doing the whole linear distance.
Yeah.
You're actually stepping into the next.
Yeah, this is all using all we know about, you said before, no one had the thought jets. Before that, it was like your propeller. What else are you going to do? And then there's jets, but, then you have rockets. And then at the moment, we're still trying to go, well, if we have rocket technology, it's going to take years to get to Mars, and it's going to take years and this and that. So it's still a very restricted thinking. It's highly advanced, right? Like what, Elon's done with SpaceX is very, very advanced, but then it looks almost limited then when you think about what it's achieving. It's using solid fuel and has to break out of the Earth's atmosphere with immense amounts of energy and emissions and all these sort of things. So yeah, I do wonder that there's some sort of leap that has to happen, or that kind of what you mentioned, that outside the box again. And I feel like that's missing from a lot of things, how we deal with energy, how we do it, how we make stuff.
I mean, the fact is that it can happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because those things, one thing is for sure, that everything is accelerating far on a faster pace than ever before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a definite. So when we look at the development of the rockets in terms of traveling distance and things like that. So I've been looking at that development over, say, 80 years, but the pace of evolution is accelerating so much faster.
Yeah.
And that means we're not looking at 80 years in the future.
No.
That is exactly where the thinking stops us by observing possibilities, because the intent of understanding it needs to come through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's already people having that.
Yeah.
The ideas coming through.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure about that, obviously. But then, as we said, every time there's an awakening, there always will be the existing power that will not accept it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a car going past.
Didn't expect that.
Very unusual situation. I've seen a car go past.
Yeah, I don't know where the kangaroos drove.
Yeah, that maybe someone like exploring something. Maybe someone got lost at the end of the universe.
Kangaroos have hot-wired it.
I've never seen this car. That's the first car I've seen go by. Yeah. It's Bolivia.
Yeah.
Maybe we should go there and say hello. I reckon there's someone from the city's got lost. Because it's very easy to get lost.
It is. It's very easy.
Yeah, it is. Like just tracks. If you kind of continue following those tracks, you suddenly have no idea where you are.
Yep.
So obviously, the biggest problem we have is that we've got the power of the established old.
Yeah.
That doesn't want the new.
No, that happens all the time. New technologies get people who come up with them disappear. Yep.
But the thing is, obviously, it always breaks through in the end.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Yeah.
It always breaks through.
Yeah.
So when all the developments of the past always broke through, they were initially rejected.
Yeah.
I mean, just like when the first train came up, when that was developed, how much uproar that caused, and then the first car, and then, my God, everyone's speaking, we should go faster than 18 kilometer per hour.
Yeah. There was a big issue with Concorde, supersonic jets.
Yeah.
That was an incredible breakthrough in terms of just everything, right? Like you could go New York to Paris in 3 hours or something.
Mm-hmm.
the narrative was there was a noise issue because of this, they'd break the sound barrier. So when they're coming in and out of airports, there'd be a huge, you know, boom, and then, you know, so there's obviously would have been a way around that, but the technology and was then vilified as being unsafe because there was a crash or something like that. And that's all it took. And it took a few narratives, an accident, and then that was it. It was gone. This is in the 70s.
Yeah.
So this is 50 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And then the Boeing 747 has just technically been retired as of like 2020. That was designed in the late 60s, right? So in general, there's been almost, in that respect, almost a freeze on innovation in that one area alone. And there would have been all these emergent technologies and needs to figure out different ways and efficiency. But the now supersonic travel is back. It's like now they're building them again. So there was this breakdown pause. And then they're like, actually, we should probably go revisit that because there was something there. And that's, I'm not saying that's the future at all. I'm just saying it's an example of like, this is what happens when, you know, it happens in, you know, corporate espionage all the time. Some company doesn't like what someone's doing. They either sabotage it by like claiming that they're unsafe or actually literally sabotaging like vehicles and things happens all the time, or they'll buy out a technology and just put it on a shelf somewhere in like an Indiana Jones style aircraft hangar in a box and then forget about it. It's gone. So we don't want your competitive thing, or, you know, people invented get disappeared or, you know, whatever happens. So there's always a force against that. There's some change happens. It's challenging the status quo and then it gets buried or hidden or whatever happens. But I think I agree with what you're saying. I think then it finds a way.
It always finds a way. It always has in the past. It always has found its way. So one thing's for sure, like the level of consciousness is rising.
Mm.
You know, when you compare that to 40 years ago, I remember the days when I started working in social work back in the 1981 when I worked in Australia for the family services. The level of consciousness in comparison to where it's now in 2024, it's a different world.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just a much, much. So as consciousness rises, that means also people are more able to perceive the value of a new idea rather than rejecting it. If someone got a low consciousness and then suggest them, okay, it's the earth moving up to the apple, not the other way around, they're going to look at them dumb and hit them in the head.
Yeah.
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 So whereas if a high consciousness listen to that proposal, then they're going to speculate, okay, yeah, that could be, okay, if that's the case, it could be because of this. So a higher consciousness always will actually embrace new ideas more than a lower consciousness, And like, there's a lot of people say life's getting worse. These are my pet hates. Yeah, I've seen so many people, life's getting worse. No, it's the other way around. It's accelerating to a new level. It's ascending. It's not descending. And all this misunderstanding of the Kali Yuga and stuff like that, it's getting worse and worse and worse. No, it's ascending.
Mm.
Even like the top experts in the Yuga say, we are in the ascending curve. It's just because when it comes to timeline and when the idea was set up, it's okay, what is actually the progression of a certain cycle? It was depending on what dimensional local point you're referring the timeline to.
Right.
But since then we have moved up to so many different dimensions.
Yeah.
We are perceiving so many different ways of living now that like an ancient idea of a timeline is not relevant anymore.
Yeah. It's not relevant to current space.
Yeah, it's just not relevant. As Einstein said, it's relative. It's not linear. So what they saw, like what it was tens of thousands of years ago, whatever, that related to a very specific progression in relation to that three-dimensional dimension within that zodiac of that time.
Yeah.
But as we have measured 11 dimensions now, so as soon as you move into different dimension, that doesn't apply anymore.
Right.
It's a totally different time progression, and suddenly whatever when they say it's 27,000 years, it might be actually 2,000 years.
Yeah.
Or it might be even going into some kind of like spiral curve where it actually accelerates suddenly and then slows down again, whatever, you know, we don't know.
Yeah.
But the fact is that consciousness determines where the local reference point to a timeline is established.
Right.
Without your consciousness, without your observation, you don't have that reference point because, as scientists have established, life is non-local, according to a famous article in the American Scientist.
Right.
Yeah. So it's now a fact. So me, in my position, having worked with people for decades, for four or five decades now, I've seen the rise in consciousness. in comparison to whatever. So if there are more people now with higher consciousness than 40 years ago.
Yep.
And there's more, once again, 40 years ago, there were more people with higher consciousness than 40 years prior.
Sure.
So as more, like the fact is, how many acupuncture clinics do you see in your environment now?
Yeah.
Like 40 years ago, no one knew what acupuncture is.
Yeah, now it's covered by healthcare.
Yeah. 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 How many people, like 40 years ago, you would have said, I'll do Reiki.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these days, everyone knows what Reiki is.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And out of the room.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And 50% of the Australians use acupuncture.
Yeah. Is it really that much?
50%. Yeah. 50%. So acupuncture is not a mechanical art.
Mm.
Acupuncture is multidimensional.
Yeah.
Acupuncture, you open up the meridians and you allow different kinds of intents and ideas come through to the meridians, and you actually have a different reference point at that moment, because how many people get off the table and say, how long was that?
Yeah.
I lost all track of time.
Yeah.
So it could be 5 minutes, could be 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a classic example of, you know, your consciousness is a traveling multidimensional.
Yeah. So what I mentioned before about going to a posture is that discomfort and all the things that start happening is like, as soon as you're doing something strenuous, then it's like really, you're like, man, how long is this going to go for?
Yeah, it's three-dimensional.
Right, exactly. So, acupuncture would add another level into that, because it's not, like you just said, it seems like it's purely physiological, needle in, right? But then beyond that, almost that doesn't make sense.
The only thing that is X, Y, that is the location of the acupuncture point and the insertion of the needle in that point and then the stimulation.
Yeah.
Which is a mechanical movement of that.
Right.
What happened then?
No, yeah, because that even then,
transcending
almost doesn't explain what happens, because it's like the needle's like barely what, a couple of millimeters in your skin or something. Sometimes sitting on the top almost, and then so even that doesn't explain it. You know,
yeah,
it clearly goes somewhere completely different very quickly.
Yeah, straight on. Bang.
So yeah, I guess a hot tip if you want to time travel, go get some acupuncture. You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you can do all kind of stuff with acupuncture.
Right,
I mean, according to some sources, acupuncture was the main modality in Atlantia times.
Yeah.
So it's not like Michio, one of the big authorities in the esoteric acupuncture scenes. He always argued that China's not the origin of acupuncture.
Yeah.
It's actually Atlantis.
Who said this?
What's his name? I forgot his name now. The originator of esoteric acupuncture, which is a branch you study in America, you license degree first, and then you just do a 5-year study.
Okay.
And so, I studied it myself when I was in America. I did some courses with them and things like that. So they're arguing the point, and they're all like proper PhD scientists who do those courses. They're not like trippers. I mean, when you do get the acupuncture, it's trippy. There's no doubt about it.
Yep.
It goes far beyond anything I experienced on ordinary drugs. And so it's just it's a new level in itself. So they're arguing the point that acupuncture is it comes from the Atlantean times.
Mm.
It's not China's not the origin of China's often. So you could say it's Atlantis medicine,
right? Because you know, same with Egypt and all those places that we assume originated these things. Everything we read about that, they're already doing it. They're in the middle of it. So I'm like, well, how far back that had to have come if they were comfortable using this stuff. And, you know, what we read and listened to a lot is that the pyramids, they were just there. They occupied them. They didn't make them.
Yeah.
So
what goes on with those pyramids is just like, the more you know about it, the more puzzling it becomes.
It's great. I love it. I've been reading and listening more about it. And like, I'm more not confused, I guess, in a way, but I don't care. It's just great. It's just amazing to go and just accept the fact that we don't know that it's not what we think it is. And I think the fact that academics and historians and people who are so in, you know, archaeologists who are so just won't let that go, fighting. This is the establishment versus the you know, won't even acknowledge that they're
but who listens to them?
Exactly. And they're losing their ground. They don't have, you know, you look at who, like, we see Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock and a lot of these people are in that field. They're sort of harnessing social media and, you know, being on podcasts and have massive audiences. Well, these other guys, you're right, the gatekeepers, no one gives a speak. You said they're almost irrelevant now, but they're roadblocking. They're still,
but
getting in the way.
That.
Exactly.
And I mean,
I think it's,
this is those guys, those historians would have believed that paper narrative in line with the old power.
Yeah.
The people will just speak about that. I mean, they belong to the dying institutions.
Yeah.
No one goes there anymore.
Yeah, but they can't. Yeah. They can't actually admit that. So they just, you know, so the best thing they can do is just shut up, you know. Yeah. But they won't. It's I think it's, if it's breaking your worldview, and it's quite difficult if someone comes and says everything, you know, your whole worldview is wrong. But I think that would find that to be interesting. I'm like, okay, well, let's go find the, let's find some better answers. You know,
that's the nature of life. Yeah. You know, once you hit the wall, okay, I'm going to restart again.
But I think it's also, I don't think people, some of them can handle a journey without an end. I think in academia, in a traditional sense, is achieving knowledge and reaching a point where you can no longer be challenged and you know everything, you're an expert, and then the end, underline. There's no way to, you're not learning more. You're an authority on that information. So therefore you tell people below you truth. So they don't, I think they can handle that. They're at the top and then the mist is cleared. And there's another peak above them. They don't want to even deal with that. But look, like any form of knowledge or learning or information or training or martial art, you don't ever believe you've gotten to the top. You know, it's an endless journey. You just keep going. So this stuff for me is like, I don't think I'm going to get to maybe we don't know the actual truth, whatever that means, but it doesn't matter. It's really interesting to go that way and find out that there is way more to it versus just going, hitting an end.
Yeah,
going,
that's why I like the Taoist.
Yeah. Say, like, I don't know.
That's why you need Tai Chi, because as soon as you start doing your first move, you know nothing.
Suck. I still do it. Every once in a while, I'm like, man, I've been doing this 10 years and I suck at it.
Yeah. You'll never get there.
No, but just,
it's always moving ahead of you.
Totally fine. Like, yeah. I don't want to be a belt or a master it's impossible.
That's why I think Niels Bohr adopted the Tai Chi symbol as his coat of arms, the famous quantum physicist, the Danish quantum physicist, because of that fact that Tai Chi is non-local.
Yeah.
It always is ahead of you.
Man.
You can't get a grip of it.
Yeah.
Whoever.
Yeah.
I mean, where did it come from? No one knows anyway.
Yeah.
And the fact is, like, it's putting you into a three-dimensional pause by using a fourth-dimensional effect of the time by moving, but then the experience is beyond. It goes multidimensional very quickly.
Yeah.
And then you suddenly will be getting shaken out of it and you're trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And then you need to bring your body up to that, what you perceived.
Yeah.
So it always brings in a new idea.
Yeah.
And then you just have to take your body towards that.
Yeah.
So it's profound.
Yeah.
Once again, it's a form that the gods have used, and it's probably from Atlantean times and Lemurian times and whatever other civilizations beforehand. And then once again, where did they get it from?
Well, yeah, I was listening to, you listened to him too, Billy Carson. He was an interesting, I recommend you look him up if you haven't heard him before. He's a very interesting character. He's talked a lot about everything imaginable, you know, UFOs and things, but also these emerald tablets, which are sort of, you know, 30,000-40,000 year old tablets, which are a real thing. They're the sort of basis for a lot of alchemy, all these sort of, it's hard to even explain that, but the way he talks about stuff is fascinating in terms of getting into these origins of things. And one of them is mentioning Atlantis wasn't a city, it was a civilization.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, we often say, oh, the city of Atlantis is and there's always this fight over if it was real. Where was it? There's evidence that suggests there was a structure that I think it was Plato explained that looks very much like a location in North Africa. But what Billy said, and I looked into a bit afterwards, is that it's more of a global, like a civilization, not a city.
Mm-hmm.
And that made perfect sense when you start to think about why it's such a mythology. It's like, oh, it's just one magical city when everything came from. But if you go, no, it was actually much, much larger than that, which is why we have pyramids on every major continent in the world and why all these things,
yes, that makes sense.
Civilizations that have very similar designs in the way they iconography from.
It wasn't like an
South America to eat. Civilization or a reality versus this one special city.
Mm.
And then it starts to open up all these other explanations of why we have cultural things that from South America to Africa to places that shouldn't have been in contact have very similar architecture, art, all these things, you know, why they actually seem like they're very closely related. Because it was a unifying thing, not just this one mythical place. But if you say Atlantis to people, they just completely, you know, it's ridiculous, silly. It's just, it's been turned into a trivial thing. Like you got, you know, superhero movies that they're all underwater and et cetera, et cetera. So it's another one of those aspects where it's a doorway into more interesting ideas and possibilities on where we come from. And that, to me, then is interesting. That indicates where we're headed too, as a, we've been here a lot longer. We've done a lot more than we think we have.
Yeah, what I like on Billy Carson is that he also says, because a lot of people always refer to Atlantis, that means we go on the same fate.
Yeah, right.
And gonna destroy, that we're yeah. going to destroy ourselves again.
Yeah.
You know, that AI is going to be the end of it. And I like his view where he says, maybe this time we get the message.
Yeah.
And we won't actually decline. And I feel we, like, I like what he says. We've been here so many times before that maybe we're getting the idea now.
Mm.
And it could be quite possible that we this time we're getting it because there's an awakening now that is, I mean, of course, Newton first, then quantum mechanics, but then the hippies. But now there's an awakening. I think that is like really hitting in everyone's face that, hang on, we don't want this bullshit anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very obvious. And obviously the reason why it's accelerating so fast is because obviously the information spread.
Yeah.
That it's now due to internet and things like that. And the fact is that the power sources of the old power, they can't actually control the internet as such.
No, it's interesting.
They can't destroy it. If they destroy that, then they lose all their interest.
Yeah, I think they messed up there.
Yeah, yeah. This is a thing what I can see more and more and more, like the same as Brett Weinstein.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Not see that
David,
we are now stronger than that.
Yeah, whether we're with the slingshot.
We are stronger than that.
Yeah, it's a David and Goliath situation.
Like for me, I'm totally fascinated about that Tucker Carlson Putin interview that came out
I haven't listened
yesterday.
To it yet. Yeah.
And so I've already watched it three times because I'm totally fascinated because this is a game changer, that interview. And because it really highlights how brainwashed the Western world is by the American interest, by this power people, Bill Gates, etc., whatever name you want to give it.
Yeah.
But the most striking aspect is the enormous, like the high intelligence that Putin has in comparison to someone like Biden.
Yeah, and I've seen some clips and I've read about it, and he went on a half an hour talk about the history of Russia. And then literally the same day, Biden's been accused of taking sensitive documents, which is what they accused Trump of.
Yeah.
And they basically, the argument for Biden not being guilty was that he was not, didn't have complete mental faculties. So they basically admitted he's a head case on the same day that Putin gives this very eloquent 2-hour-long interview, right? So the contrasts, even if irrelevant of everything else, irrespective of everything that anyone said or did, that alone is amazing.
Yeah.
Those things happen in the same day, in the same world, in the same reality, theoretically, right?
Yeah, when you, I've been looking at all the, for me, it's because I'm an observer. I don't take a stand as such. I mean, I look at the intelligence. I don't have any respect for Australian for most of the Australian politicians.
Yeah,
I'm uneasy. I have no respect.
I don't know. Pay attention.
It doesn't matter if he's good or bad. I can't make sense of that guy. There's nothing to get a grip of.
No.
And Biden, I can't get a grip of. It is, I have no idea what's going on.
I don't think he does either.
But those of, there's a lot of people who are brainwashed about Putin. I'm not a Putin lover.
Yeah.
I'm not a Putin supporter.
Yeah.
I have got the highest respect for Putin.
Yeah.
And so his intelligence is mind-boggling. So those of, if someone listens and hasn't listened to the interview, please watch that interview before you, because there's a misrepresentation of him in the Western world. But I'm not in taking a stand the political side.
Yeah.
I'm an observer.
Yeah.
And because my life is as a Taoist and a therapist, I observe. And then I want to make sense of where people's awareness is, because that reflects on in which way what needs to be implemented in terms of health strategies.
Yeah.
So I read the comments.
Yeah.
In the comment, I mean, it's a lot of comments on YouTube.
There's
already 1 million comments.
Yeah.
So not 1 million, 1 million likes and 300,000 comments. So I took 1 hour to go through most of that, took quite a few. The awakening you can see in there, people are awakening up.
Yeah.
And that is because a lot of people, she had no idea about this.
Yeah.
This is what stands out.
Yeah.
I had no idea about this. I had no idea about, we are completely misled.
Yeah.
People now see. Of course, Putin, it will have his dark side. You know, there's probably not a good idea to be a journalist in Russia if you oppose him.
Yeah.
that you probably won't see much of the day. So free speech, maybe not a good idea in case you're speaking up against Putin.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see all that part.
Yeah.
But his intelligence is undeniable.
Yeah.
His clarity of vision is undeniable. His ability to speak and to keep a thorough process all the way through, and Tucker Carlson really trying to get him off track quite a few times, and it always brought it back. He always brought it, kept it.
Yeah.
So that was obviously such a refresher to all this dumb stupidity of the politician we see lately.
Yeah.
Like, if you listen to Albanese, he just, you know, for a moment.
I don't even know what his voice sounds like. Every time I just turn around. I
can't listen to Biden.
Yeah. No, it's like, well, he literally doesn't make sense anyway.
It's
so.
Like, is there no one there that makes any sense?
Yeah.
All the premiers here, like the Queensland premier, is like, dash, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Can't listen to it.
Yeah.
There's no inspiration. So we have seen so much like negativity lately because of the powers were trying to control the world, trying to make people dumb.
Yeah, well, the most interesting thing about this is, and I haven't listened to the interview, and I'm probably on the same page. I just, it's 2 years after this war started, and no one's heard from him.
No.
There have been how many bullshit interviews with Zelensky?
Yeah.
Like, someone posted a contrast of an interview that someone gave him a year or two ago, and they're like, you know, how are you going emotionally? You know, what kind of music do you listen to? Do you have trouble getting to sleep at night? And he's got sort of teary eyes, and it's just complete nonsense.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone painted him as a hero, fighting the good fight against this. And like, whether that's true or not is irrelevant. Why can't we have both sides? Same during COVID. It was the biggest problem there was that there was no
discussion.
There was no discussion. There was no debate. There was no ability to have it out. It was one side was right, the other side was wrong. And that was the most wrong thing about the whole thing, was that there was no ability to have any balanced. Mm. And so before Tucker even posted the interview, there's been this massive kickback from the mainstream saying, you know, you're not Russian asset. And people were like, oh, a journalist doing journalism. Oh my gosh. Like, what a. And like you said, and I've only heard some clips, is like he was asking difficult questions. He asked about a journalist who was in prison in Russia. He asked about, he's actually trying to get to the bottom of stuff. He wasn't just there to give the guy, like, you know, like support him.
Tucker is fearless.
Yeah.
Because we've got to be aware,
well, literally,
the presence of Putin will be overwhelming. It's not like the presence of Albanese. Yeah.
Not to mention,
you know, when you see Albanese, you want to kick him in the ass and fuck off.
Yeah, but like, and going to Russia, right?
Yeah.
So that's takes both.
Yeah.
So
he's got a strong presence. Plus, he's like a black belt in several martial arts.
Oh, that's cool.
He's a jiu-jitsu, karate, judo. No, the guy knows how to fight.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
So he knows how to presence. So yeah, it's three black belts.
Yeah.
All right. And Steven Seagal is one of his training partners.
Okay, you know that. It's weird.
And some good stuff on YouTube.
Okay.
Put up Vladimir Putin jiu-jitsu.
Okay. Yep.
It's like he rolls people.
Yeah, okay.
Like 12 people attack him, he rolls them. Of course, could be staged because you
want to actually know. You beat me again, Putin. I can't believe it.
But anyone who has got some martial art experience can tell straight away the guy is highly skilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just love the day when Tony Abbott said to Putin, I come to Australia, I'm on a shirt
in front of you.
A shirt front of you.
First of all, no one knows what that means. I had to look it up, right? Some like 1940s thing for like, snub or something, basically.
Yeah, it's basically rugby stuff.
Yeah, it's like rugby, that was your one moment in the limelight, you know, in like global, you know, news. And you say something that no one knows what it means because it's like some ancient term.
And obviously.
Oh, God.
Tony Abbott didn't know who Putin is.
Yeah.
And then Putin heard about it. They said, he wants a shirt from me.
Yeah.
And it had to be explained to him what it means.
Yep.
And that's a rugby term. They go in front of chest against chest.
Yeah, didn't know. Yeah.
And he said, all right. He sort of took on the challenge.
Yes.
And then Tony Abbott was advised not to do it.
Not to do it.
Because then I showed Tony Abbott the martial arts skills that Putin has.
Yeah.
And then he realized, okay, I bet I don't.
Yeah, not very good. Yeah.
But you're not a good idea.
Yeah. No.
And so obviously on top of that, Putin runs this big country. So there's obviously an enormous power that comes with him that he established himself. Yeah. The training, the lifestyle, the martial art and the politics. And Tucker Carlson, it's amazing how he stands his ground
against
him, the fearlessness. Yeah. But what I liked on it, what really got me, is like, finally, an intelligent discussion. Okay, what makes you tick? Who are you? What is behind you?
Yeah.
And someone was able to actually explain it in such fascinating, deeply intelligent then.
Yeah. I mean, it sort of reminds me, it's one of those, you know, 60 Minutes or something back in the 60s, like once.
Yeah, ago, 30 years ago.
Edward R. Murrow, these people were just proper journalists who weren't afraid. Like Edward R. Murrow went up against McCarthyism in the US and risks his own safety. And he's like, no, this is my job. And I'm going to go beyond that. I'm going to actually say what I think because no one's doing it. This is important. I mean, that's kind of disappeared.
Why I think of what over the last few years, it really struck me how this power is trying to make everyone dumb and weak.
Yeah.
It's when I look at what happens over the last 4 years, the ruling powers try to make everyone as dumb, as stupid as possible, and as weak and unhealthy as possible.
Yeah, encouraging it, right? Providing the tools, you know, making it as easy as possible to...
And having read the comments, like on YouTube, the comments on Twitter, on X, I haven't seen any comments on Facebook yet because Putin doesn't like Facebook. He made it illegal. He said,
Do you remember when the war started and everyone was trying to be virtue signaling? So they all these companies came out and said, oh, we're not going to provide. I think Facebook was like, we're not going to provide a service to Russia anymore.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's said, we're going to pull out everything. Everyone's like, yeah, thanks. Anything else? Like, fuck off. I know on Netflix, like, okay, great. That's actually doing us a favor.
The interesting thing is obviously that I heard that when every time I talk to Germany, to my European friends, because so many sanctions were against Russia during that time.
Yeah.
But Russia is now the number one economy in Europe.
Right.
And so.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting how the Western economy is not so going down.
Well, that's an old tactic, isn't it? Oh, we're going to embargo them. We're going to, stop them getting stuff. And it's like, thanks. Less shit.
Completely. That's them in the yard.
Yeah.
Completely the other way around.
Yeah.
And I mean, Germany is so they're downhills.
Sure. Surprised by that.
It's so crazy. It was such a strong country. And now they're just so caught up in that, in this brainwashing of this. Must come from America, this American politics lifestyle.
Again, I've only heard clips, but that's one thing Putin mentioned is the war, like America is the best, the war of propaganda and influencing with media. So that's what they're tactically the best at is those things, which you can see how it happened, especially in the past few years, how that was kind of emanated from there, the way everyone imitated that process. That was all from the WHO and Bill Gates and all these idiots. I don't even want to talk about them anymore. I'm so fucking sick of saying their names, but
that's the word.
It's like a temp.
That should make it illegal. You mentioned those.
People are pushing back though, especially on the WHO's pandemic treaty. A lot of people are standing up to it and saying no, Slovakia and these countries, and a lot of people are calling bullshit on it.
Yeah, that's right. Once again, like this is obviously for me why I think this is that interview wasn't a historical moment because I read the comments and. And all the comments, people are saying, I had enough.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to see that people now starting to realize they have been totally been taken down the wrong road. And that's exactly the problem of those established powers that want to make us weak. And people are now, that's it.
Yeah.
I had enough.
Yeah.
And just so many comments. Obviously, I commented, obviously. Also.
300,001 comments.
And because that interviews like that need to be encouraged.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it, because obviously I want more interviews like that.
Yeah.
So that we just that we can see I like Putin's view on that. The idea is to bring different views together because he said we got a right brain and we got a left brain, and we got the right brain is the rational, the left brain, the creativity. And by having opposing ideas within there, because the two different brains are actually in one head.
Yeah.
And that means it's the same as the earth.
Yeah.
And that's the same as with East and West. You just it's time to come together and to create something whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously Western American sources don't want him to say things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because obviously that's why the propaganda goes against you, making really negative. But once again, I'm focusing on the comments and the comments.
Yeah.
Really showing people had enough.
Yeah.
And people now, this is time not to speak up and just like, I mean, it's like, I don't know anyone who speaks, who wants to support that old bullshit anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know anyone.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is now the time, this final new awakening. Okay, this is it. And we're just going to create a new world. Fuck you all.
That could be on our flag. Yeah. I don't think we can top that. I think you should probably end on that one.
End on that note.
You heard it from us first, yeah.
You're 5 years old.
All right. Well, until next time.